So first of all, I'd like to thank everybody for coming, and I'm sorry that I'm being batal your Torah for what is probably not real. I mean, whatever, it's something. But it's not, you probably could be learning more right now. There's a famous comment, there's a famous kasha in the Gemara Megillah, Daf Gimel. The Gemara says, Mevatlin Talmud Torah, the Shmuel Mikra Megillah. So all the Achronim ask, why is it called Bittul Torah to go here in Mikra Megillah? So one of the famous answers is because qualitatively, Mikra Megillah is not really as good as learning, like, you know, Gemara. So I don't know if this qualifies as much, but whatever, we'll see. So the first thing I want to talk about before I get to the main topic, which is going to be about the importance of Chazara, which I think, especially for those of you who are in a Chabura, who are trying to Chazar and actually know a decent amount of Gemara, is a very important thing, which we'll get to in a second. I want to start with a quick idea from the Parsha that will hopefully tie into this idea, as we'll see in a second. There is a very obvious stira that appears in last week's Parsha, right? When Bas Paro opens up the box, Vatiftach Vatireu Esayeled Vihine Na'ar Bocha. So anyone who knows anything about Hebrew grammar will notice right away that the word yeled and the word na'ar are not the same thing. Yeled is a baby, a na'ar is a kid who's, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years old. How did Moshe turn into a na'ar two words after being a yeled? So Rashi deals with this issue. Rashi says, Kolo kina'ar, his voice was like a na'ar, and the Ramban says, why are you possibly Moshe from singing Shira? Again, I don't want to focus on that point. The Haksav HaKabbalah, Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, has a completely different read of the word Na'ar. He thinks Na'ar is not a description of Moshe's age, but rather the word Na'ar comes from the word Hisorus, inspiration. And Bas Paro says, the Haksav HaKabbalah, was able to notice this idea of Hisorus, of inspiration, on Moshe's face, even as a baby. So according to him, when the Pasuk says, Vihine Na'ar Bocheh, it doesn't mean that Moshe all of a sudden turned 13 years old after being a baby. That's not possible. But rather, that Bas Paro could already see that Moshe had some sort of inspiration about him. This is very, you know, similar to what Rashi says when Moshe was born, that the house filled up with light, as the Gemara says, right? So maybe it's related to that. In a similar vein, the Haksav HaKabbalah in Parshas Vayeshev makes a similar comment regarding Yosef. We know that Yosef is also described as a Na'ar. Rashi in Parshas Vayeshev claims that the description of the word Na'ar for Yosef is derogatory, that Yosef curled his hair and made himself look pretty. The Haksav HaKabbalah says, no, again, Yosef, and the word Na'ar is from the word Hisorus, that, as we know, Unkelis says that Yosef was a Bar Chakim Hule, right? He was a Ben Zikunim. He was intelligent. He was wise beyond his years. According to the Haksav HaKabbalah, the description of Na'ar by Yosef is not derogatory. It's the exact opposite. Yosef actually was inspirational, and he was really aspirational, to be honest. He was looking ahead to try and become as great as he possibly could. So that's the first thing. One other point before we get to the main topic. This is a complete side point. So I don't know how many of you have ever learned Makos before. If you ever went to camp, you probably have learned the first daf of Makos, or the first daf and a half of Makos, and then probably stopped. But Tosfos, in the beginning of Makos, on Dibra Maskel, Mi'idinanu V'ishkoloni, Tosfos raises a very famous question. Right? The second case in the opening mission in Makos is regarding Eden who testify that a person killed B'shogeg, and therefore he goes to Gullus, and there's a whole discussion. If they become Eden's own men, they have to get Malkus. Fine. Tosos wants to know, how can you ever believe Eden who come and say that this guy killed B'shogeg? The person can just turn around and say, I did kill, but I killed B'mezid. And we know that if a person kills B'mezid, so he doesn't go to Gullus because he's supposed to get Misa, but on the other hand, if a person implicates himself and says, I killed B'mezid, you can't kill him either, because you're not allowed to kill a person based on his own testimony. So you're kind of caught in a pickle here a little bit. So Tosos asks, why don't we just, you know, throw the whole case out of Bezdin to begin with? So Tosos addresses that question. However, the Maharsha and other Achronim are bothered by Tosos's question in the first place. What do you mean we believe a person to say, I killed B'mezid? We have a principle in the Gemara in many places called Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. What do you mean? I can't implicate myself. I can't walk into Beis Din one day and say, I murdered, or I was Machal Shabbos, or I was Oved Avodah Zarah. We don't believe you, right? So the Maharsha is very bothered by this. You know what the Maharsha says? And this is the Maharsha, and also the Maram Shik, and other Achronim say a similar idea. They say, you're right. Really, we shouldn't believe you when you say that, but we have a technical issue. What's the technical issue? The problem is the following. Imagine we say, okay, we're not going to believe you to say that you killed B'mezid because then we're going to, you know, have to exempt you from going to Gullus. On the other hand, and again, just to frame this a little bit in context, Tosos compares this case to the case in the beginning of Bava Metzia regarding a person who, let's say, two Anim come into Bezin and say, Achal techeila b'shogeg, you ate chela, certain forbidden fats of an animal b'shogeg, where normally the punishment is you have to bring a carbon chatas. But the guy turns around and says, I did eat chela, but I ate a b'mezid. So if that were true, he would not be chayav a karba. So the reason why we believe believe him in that case is because if we didn't believe him, and we were now going to say, no, you really ate the achila b'shogeg, we're going to force him to bring a karban, and if it turned out that he really ate a b'mezid, he would be violating a different isur d'oraisa of bringing what's called chulin ba'azara, of bringing a regular animal that has no kedusha in the Beis HaMikdash, which is also an isur d'oraisa. So in order to avoid this technical problem, the achronim say, we don't have a choice, we have to believe him in the context of chilev, but in the case of murdering b'shogeg or b'mezid, we don't believe him. Why am I mentioning this? What does it do to anything about Chazara? So I think this idea of Ein Adam Meisim Atzmo Rasha is actually related to the first two points we mentioned from the Haksava HaKabbalah. It has a lot to do with the way that we view ourselves. It has a lot to do with our own self-perception. It has a lot to do with the way that we look at the world around us. Specifically, this idea that I am trying to aspire to a certain level, whether that's in learning or whether that's in my midos, a lot of that revolves around the way that you view yourself as you relate to other people, but also in this case, as we know, when it comes to bin adam la'atzma, the way that you look at yourself in terms of your own avodas Hashem. A person is never allowed to make themselves into a rasha, meaning you're never allowed to look at yourself and say, I can't accomplish something, I can't reach that level, I can't reach that goal, and we'll see, hopefully as we go along, how exactly, practically, we're going to get to that point where we can effectively do chazara in such a way where we can actually remember that which we've done. Now, the simplest way to do that is just say, okay, just spend the rest of your life doing chazara, which, you know, is ideal, but we'll hopefully talk a lot about tonight just some of the important aspects of Chazara and where it comes up in the Gemara. So probably the first Gemara, the most famous Gemara that discusses the concept of Chazara, is a Gemara in Masechas Chagiga on Daf Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara cites a pasuk from Sefer Malachi, where the pasuk says, the Shavtem Uriisem bin Tzadik La Rasha bin Oveda Lokim La Asher Lo Avada. The pasuk in Malachi is contrasting a person who's an Oveda Lokim, person who worships Hashem, and a person who's Asher Lo Avada, one who doesn't worship Hashem. Now, if you would ask me, I would have said, okay, person who worships Hashem, you know, I don't know, they spend their day learning, they're doing chesed mitzvot, and a guy who doesn't is the person who doesn't do any of those things. The Gemara says no. The definition of a person who's not Oveda Hashem is a guy who only chazers Gemara 100 times. But if you want to be an Oved Hashem, you have to chazer 101 times. What does that mean? So the Baal Tanya has a famous pshat, where the Baal Tanya basically says, in Perek Tezvav of Tanya, he basically suggests that in the times of the Gemara, the standard, the norm, was to chazer everything 100 times. So if you chazer 100 times, like, okay, big deal. Like, everyone does that. But 101, that was already like a mile. That was already a big deal. So 101, that demonstrated that you were already in Eved Hashem. The Netziv in the Merome Saga and his parish on Gemara and Chagigas, you know, echoes a similar idea. Also, he says, you know, that you know, a Talmud Chacham learns 100 times, because again, that was considered to be standard, but only a person who really wants to grow in learning Torah will chazer things 101 times. There's also a very, very interesting discussion in one of the achronim in a tshuva called the Maram al Shakar in Siman Kuf Aleph. There's a whole discussion about whether a person is able to give his mitzvos and schar to another person. I don't know if any of you ever like thought about this when you were like little kids, like, I'll give you my own halva for like whatever. Like, there's actually a discussion whether that works. Like, can I give you a share in my own halva or my mitzvos or my schar in exchange for something else? And he says that even that somehow this were to work, he says it's such a bizayon to a person's avodas Hashem that you're going to, it's like imagine, like Esav and Yaakov, like throwing away the bechorah for a bowl of lentil soup kind of thing, right? It's like, I'm going to throw everything away for whatever it is that I want right now. He says that's such a terrible bizayon. And he says, whatever gain you possibly get from this transaction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish you for degrading your avodas Hashem like that. So that's what the Maram al-Shakar says. The Kli Yakar in Parshas Ve'eschanan writes, again commenting on that Gemara in Chagiga, in the Pasuk from Malachi that we quoted before, he says that the Rashi Tevos of Lo Avado, which are the words in that Pasuk in Malachi, the Lamed and the Ayin are 100, right? Because only, as we said, if you learn only 100 times, you're called a Lo Avado, you're not considered a real Eved Hashem, but the Rashi Tevos of Oved Elokim La'asher, which is the other half of that pasuk, is 101. So therefore, he says, you see, already alluded to in the pasuk in Malachi, is this distinction between learning 100 versus 101. He also points out that if you subtract the gematria of the word zecher, which means memory, and the word shachak, which means to forget, it's 101. So when you learn 101 times, you overcome the problem of shichicha, of forgetfulness. He also points out, which I don't fully understand, but he says that there's a malach who's appointed over memory, whose name is Zecher, and he has 227 kochos, and the malach Shachach, who's appointed over forgetfulness, has 328 kochos, which is 101 more than the malach of Zechira. So again, these are all kind of more or less the same idea that he's expressing in different ways, that when you chazer 101 times, you are guaranteed to remember your learning. Okay, also, there's a discussion in the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak, where tshuva is written by Dayan Weiss, in his introduction to Chilek Vav of his tshuvos, he discusses, first of all, so I don't know if any of you are learning Daf Yomi, or have ever thought about learning Daf Yomi, but one of the questions that all of the Achronim and all the Rishonim really are bothered by in the beginning of Masechus Brachos is really two questions. First of all, why is it called Brachos if the topic of Brachos doesn't appear till the sixth parak? And second of all, why is it not called Masechus Kriya Shema or whatever, or something like that, right? Something that's more apropos to the beginning of the Masechta. So there are a lot of answers to this question. So the Minchas Yitzchak quotes that the reason why we're referring to this Masechta as Brachos as opposed to Kriya Shema or Tefillah or whatever it is that because we know you have to recite a Brachas HaTorah before you learn. And he also points out that the Bahag, which is one of the Rishonim, right, the Baal HaLachos Gedolos, opens his Sefer HaMitzvos by discussing the mitzvah of Brachas HaTorah. That's like the parallel. That's the first thing you have to do before you engage in anything else. The very end of Daf Yomi, for those of you who ever paid attention, the very end of Masechus Nida, it's also a Gemara that appears in Masechus Megillah. It's a very famous line from the Gemara because we say it every day in Eretz Yisrael. They say it on Shabbos and Chutzlaretz. Kol Hashoneh Halachos B'chol Yom Muftach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba. There's actually a really interesting Marsha in that Gemara in Nida about why, what that has to do with Hilchos Nida. Separate discussion. But he says that the reason why Gemara ends with that phrase of Kol Hashoneh Halachos is because there's a mitzvah to engage in learning halacha even if you already know it, which is why Shas begins with Maseches Brachos, because Brachos is a reference to Berachas HaTorah. So that's a perfect segue from the end of Shas to the beginning of Shas. Kol Hashoneh Halachos, and the way to frame, the way to begin learning halacha is by starting with a Berachas HaTorah in the beginning of your learning. He also points out, by the way, is if you need more encouragement to say Berachas HaTorah in the morning, the Berachas HaTorah is a segula to not forget that which you've learned. And he even points out, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu initially forgot all the learning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught him until Hashem eventually gave it as a gift. Once it was given to him as a gift, he never forgot what Hashem taught him anymore. And in that sense, in fact, the Pasuk in Parshas Chukas compares Torah to a matana. It's considered some form of a gift. It's considered to be, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah makes this distinction also, that initially the Torah is referred to as Toras Hashem, and only later, once we learn it, it's considered Torah so. It's considered our own Torah. Specifically, once we recite a Birchas HaTorah, it's very reminiscent of the Gemara in the sixth parak of Brachos that says that before we recite brachos on food, the food belongs to Hashem, and if we eat it without making a bracha, it's like we violated me'ila, it's like we, you know, took something from Hashem without asking permission, whereas after we make the bracha, the food essentially belongs to us, and the bottom line is, in all of this, the Minchas Yitzchak says that Birchas HaTorah and Chazara are segulos for helping you remember your learning. So, again, I don't think those are chidushim. I think Birchas HaTorah you should say anyway, because it's a chiyuv to say. You're not really allowed to learn Torah without saying Birchas HaTorah, and obviously Chazara, you know, is kind of necessary to just remember that which you've learned. Also, the Chasam Sofer in the middle of a tshuva in Orach Chaim, Chelek Aleph Simen Chaf, discusses, this has nothing to do with Chazara at all, but it has to do with the number 101 that we alluded to before. This is, I'm sure you've heard this discussion before, this is a pretty famous issue regarding the frequency with which you say Mashiv HaRuach Umor HaGashim, right? Say a person, let's say it's the first week after we started saying Mashiv HaRuach, person is unsure whether they said Mashiv HaRuach in Shemona Esrei, so the question becomes, at what point do we assume that it's now frequent, that you've said it enough times that you probably already said Mashiv HaRuach? So the Chasam Sofer says, once you say it 101 times, we can probably assume that you've already said it because you're accustomed, you're so used to saying it at that point that you've probably said it. And again, without getting into discussions about, can I just say all them at one shot, or do I have to wait, you know, 30 days? That's a separate issue with the Achronim. But the bottom line is that he says 101 is this magic number, just like we saw by Chazara, that it allows you to, you know, it basically allows you to be able to ensure that you're no longer going to forget your learning. Okay, so we alluded to before a comment from the Baal HaTanya regarding the importance of Chazara, how 100 was considered to be normal, and 101 was considered to be, you know, a little bit, you know, was considered to be a step above that. So Rabbi Nachman in Likutei Maran and Torah Zion also discusses the idea of Chazara, and he says that tefillah leads to memory. And he says that tefillah is b'chinas emuna. It's something which is an embodiment of emuna in Hashem, and shichicha, as we mentioned before, is when a person forgets something which is in front of him. And he points out, there's a Gemara in the beginning of Megillah, it's also a Gemara in the 12th parak of Shabbos, that says that the Mem and the Samach and the Luchos Beneis Hayom. In the very beginning of Masechet Megillah says this, right? That the Mem and the Samach and the Luchos stood Bederech Nis. Mem and Samach together are 100. That stood Bederech Nis. And Rabbi Nachman says that Nis is Bechinas Shechecha. It's an embodiment of the idea of forgetfulness. And a Nis, which is Tefillah and Emunah, is the opposite of Shechecha. So Rabbi Nachman says within the Luchos itself, there's an idea of Chazara, and really the opposite of forgetfulness that's already built into it. Okay, this next word is one of my favorite words about Chazara. There's a Gemara, it appears in Megillah, it appears in Ksubas, it appears in a couple of places, where the Gemara uses the following expression. The Gemara says, Tana mine arbayin zimnin ad kaman demanach bekise. I'll just tell you the context of Megillah, for example. The Gemara Megillah is discussing the question about whether a person is yotze, his obligation to have the Sudas Purim at night. The Gemara says, unequivocally, if you eat your Sudas Purim at night, you're not yotze, right? The Gemara says that explicitly. And the Gemara had a whole question about it. The Gemara was discussing it. And the Gemara says that one of the Amorayim chazered that statement 40 times, ad keman demanach bekise, until it was securely in his pocket. So the Maram Shif in Meseches Ksubis, where the Gemara uses an identical expression, asks, what does that expression mean? That it's in your pocket? So for those of you who haven't learned Eilu Metzios, which is probably back in fifth grade, right? The Gemara says in Eilu Metzios that regarding, you know, in the whole sugya of Yiddish Shalom Midas, the Gemara says that Adam Mashmish Bekiso Bekol Shah, person is constantly checking his pockets for his wallet. So the Maram Shif says that your Torah learning should be so secure inside of your pockets, essentially, that you should be able to pull it out at any time. Also, there's a well-known Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yud Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, it's also made into a song, Shamati Shehayu Omrim, Ashri Mi Shebalachan V'Talmud B'Yadav. I heard people saying that it's a praiseworthy thing for someone who's come here with their learning in their hands. The simple pshat is that we're talking about a person at, you know, after Me'av Yasrim, when they come up to Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu praises them if their learning is biyado, if they actually understand their learning. It's probably the most famous parasha in all of Shas. The parasha says on this Gemara that this refers to a person who is diligent about taking notes. And the only way that you're going to actually remember your learning, which again is not such a big chiddush, is if you take notes, right? Okay, whether it's on a laptop, whether it's on a piece of paper, it doesn't really matter. Just take notes. It's a good idea. Trust me. I mean, my first day on NCSY Kola, which was 13 years ago, I don't know, 14, whatever it was, a long time ago, I was debating during Rav Sobolewski, which was also his first summer on Kol Hallel, during his morning halacha shir, which I believe was on Hilchos Birkas Kohanim, whether I should take notes. I decided to take notes, and I'm pretty sure I still have those notes somewhere. So it's a good idea. Just stop. A recommendation to take notes. The Egle Tal, Sach Chav Rebbe, his Hakdama to his Sefer Hilchos Shabbos, also very famous, discusses the idea that's associated with the beauty of Torah, the sweetness of Torah. This is going to be the last part of the shir, which is not specifically about Chazara, but you'll see it'll hopefully tie into what we just spoke about. The Egle Tal tries to debunk a myth or a misnomer that people have when it comes to learning Torah. He says people think that Talmud Torah has to be hard, it has to be difficult, it has to be something which is, you know, I have to like kind of grind my teeth in order to get a handle on it. The Egle Tal says the exact opposite is true. This actually just came up in Daf Yomi last, or a week and a half ago, the Gemara discussed Birchas HaTorah back in Brachos Daf Yud Aleph. The idea of Birchas HaTorah, as we say every morning, V'harivna Hashem Elokeinu is divrei Sorascha B'finu. Of course, the whole idea of Torah is that it's supposed to be sweet, it's supposed to be enjoyable, it's supposed to be something which we actually look forward to. The Egle Tal says that it's actually ideal to learn Torah in a state where you enjoy it, as opposed to in a state where you're just kind of, you know, pushing through it and just trying to get to the end. Now, obviously, not every person on the planet is going to be born with like, I love Torah and I'm great at Torah and I'm just going to fly through everything. Torah does require work, obviously. That goes without saying. But as the expression goes, when you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. So if you love learning Torah, regardless of how hard it is for you, it will still, you know, you'll still be able to reap the rewards in the end. There's also a famous comment from the Levush. Levush in Siman Mem Zayin Hilchos Birchas HaTorah basically compares Birchas HaTorah in a way to a Birchas HaNenen. Just like you make brachos on food because you enjoy the food you eat, Birchas HaTorah in a way is almost like a spiritual Birchas HaNenen. It gives you enjoyment from the Torah that you are learning. I want to end off with one idea, because you are learning Gittin, I think theoretically, right? We're learning Gittin this year. So one idea from the Gemara in Gittin, it's probably also one of the most well-known Gemaras in Gittin. You've probably heard this Gemara, you've probably heard 1,000 shiur on this Gemara. I don't want to go into this Gemara specifically about the topic, but I want to extract one point from it. The Gemara Adav Zion, of course, talks about the question of listening to music. I'm sure you all remember this Gemara, right? Okay, the Gemara discusses, right, Sholach li lamar ukva zimra menol dasir, how do we know that music is a problem? Okay, we have sukkim, maybe it only refers to, you know, a beis hamishneh. Okay, without getting into all the details and all the tshuvos of Ramosha and whether music is mutter or us, or I don't really want to talk about that right now, but I want to mention one idea. The Gemara, again, is discussing music and maybe distinguishes between, you know, a cappella music and music with instruments and whatever it is. Now, Tosfos discusses there, right? Tosfos on the Gemara. First of all, he quotes Rashi. Rashi says the Isser of music specifically is L'shorer Beveis HaMishtaos, to sing in a, you know, party type of house, in a bar, whatever it is. And Tosfos seems to say that's the implication of the Gemara in Sota, because the Gemara says Mishabat La Sanhedrin Batoshir Beveis HaMishtaos, right? Once the Sanhedrin was done away with, there was no more singing in the Beis HaMishtos. Tosfos also believes that there may be an Isser of music, even, let's say, for example, because the Yerushalmi claims that the Isser of listening to music is even when you, you know, like to have music playing when you wake up and go to sleep. It could be that that's only mutter if you're a king or a prince or whatever it is. So again, there are a lot of details regarding this, and other Rishonim say maybe the Isser is only music that's inappropriate, that has, you know, certain you know, innuendo behind the music. So again, you could look at all the Rishonim, for instance, the Ritva and the Ran and the Meiri. Everyone has their own take on the issue with music. Also, Rashi and Chagiga, there's a whole story there about why Elisha ben Avuya went off the derech. So one of the many reasons the Rashi points out, the Gemara says, is because Zemer Yevani lo pasak mipumeh, he never stopped singing Greek music. So again, you can get to that whole discussion about music. But again, I don't really care about the music part of that. I can give you a lot of bakoros if you're interested about that, if you didn't already hear them. The one point that I wanted to make about this, regarding music specifically, is the fact that Torah, in a way, is compared to music. Right? Torah we know all over the place is compared to a lot of different things. Torah is a form of a song. So I'd like to just make two quick ha'aras before I get to the main point of this last part. First of all, so for those of you who have ever learned more than like a few daf of Gemara, you might have come across the expression chasuri mechsera v'hachi katani. Ever heard that expression before? Chasuri mechsera, right? Whenever the Gemara is bothered by some sort of seemingly arbitrary transition, why did the Gemara jump to this topic? Or why is the Gemara saying this when it seems to be totally against what we just said? The Gemara says, oh, because the Mishnah was missing a line, right? The Mishnah should have said X, Y, and Z. And the question is rather obvious. Why did the Mishnah just write this line? It would have saved us 5-10 lines of Gemara. So there also are a couple of answers, but one interesting answer is given by the Teferis Yisrael, his commentary on Maseches Erechin, in Perek Dalid. The Teferis Yisrael claims, based on a Gemara at the very end of Maseches Megillah, where the Gemara says that if a person does not have a tune to go along with their learning, so then he's going to end up forgetting his learning, right? So the Teferis Yisrael writes that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi specifically, purposely took lines out of the Mishnah so it would better fit with the tune of the Mishnah. Right, that's what he says. But again, this idea of music, of Torah as a song, I think is beautifully expressed in the following Gemara. So for those of you who ever learned Megillah, which again, I assume is most of you, right? Megillah Daf Gimel, it also happens to be in the beginning of the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, which I assume is less of you. But anyway, there's a Gemara Megillah that has a famous discussion between Yehoshua and Amalek, right? Gemara has this whole discussion regarding Amalek who comes to Yehoshua, and he draws a sword on him, and Yehoshua says, why are you coming to attack me? Right? And he says, Halanu ata im litzarenu, are you for us or are you against us? And then the Amalek responds, Atabasi, I'm coming for your current avera, your current misdemeanor, which the Gemara discusses. Was that because he was mevatel Torah, or because he didn't bring the carbon tumet shalbein arbayim? The Gemara seems to conclude that the reason why the Malach was planning to attack Yehoshua was because he was, you know, busy planning the attack on the city of Yericho the whole night instead of learning Torah. Tosfos on that Gemara, both in Megillah and in Sanhedrin, cites the comment from the Rivan, from one of the Balei Tosfos, who reinterprets that whole pasuk in Yehoshua in a very drushy, homiletical fashion. He says the following. When Yehoshua asks the Malach, Halanu ata im litzarenu, he was really asking the following. Are you coming because of my lack of Talmud Torah, about which the Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu, halanu ata, or litzarenu? Are you coming because I failed to bring the carbon tamid, and we know that karbanos are megin mitzarenu, they protect us from our enemies? That was Yehoshua's question. What was the Malach's response? The Malach said, Atabasi, I'm coming for right now, which Tosfos quotes from the Rivan and says, I'm coming for your lack of Talmud Torah, about which it says, the Ata kisvu lachem es hashira hazos, which is a description of the Torah, according to most Rishonim. So Rav Shmuel Rozovsky in his Sefer Zichron Shmuel quotes from the Mashgiach of the Panovich Yeshiva, Rav Kahaneman. Rav Kahaneman asks the following very, very simple question, which is, why does the Malach use a different word to refer to Torah than Yehoshua did? Yehoshua uses the word lanu, as in Torah tziva lanu, to refer to Torah, and yet when the Malach responds, he says ata, as in va'ata kistu lachem v'sashira hazos. So says Rav Kahaneman, a beautiful idea. He says that the Malach was implicitly giving mussar to Yehoshua. He says, Yehoshua, you look at Torah merely as Torah tziva lanu. You look at Torah as a tzivui, as a command, as something I have to do, I'm obligated to do. But the thing that you're missing about Torah is that in reality, va'ata kisvu lachem es hashira hazos. Torah is really a song. It's a beautiful song. And he says, that's the point that you're missing. If you realize the beauty of Torah, that it was really a shira, so then you wouldn't spend your whole night planning a war. You would be busy learning Torah because you'd just be so involved and so overcome. right? It's just like when you have someone in your life that you're so crazy about, you're like, I don't want to do anything else. I just want to think about them, right? It's the same thing. Torah is supposed to be that way. You're supposed to think about Torah day and night. The Hagisa B'Yom V'Laila. You're supposed to be totally osik, totally involved in your Torah learning. So I think that this idea of Torah as a shira, Torah as a form of a song, is something that we all should strive towards. And I think the best way to express the way that we love Torah is by spending as many humanly possible hours of our lives, not just when we're in yeshiva, but beyond, learning Torah. Now, for some people, that's going to be different, right? Some people have 18 hours a day to learn. Some people have 3 hours a day to learn. And again, it doesn't matter how many hours a day you have to learn. The only question becomes, what do you do in those hours? The Chafetz Chaim, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, comments on one of the Mishnahs, I think it's in the fourth paragraph of Avos, that says that a person who's a Baal Malacha, a person who works, like the Mishnah says about him, Harbe Vetelim, something like that, Harbe Vetelim Kenegdo. He has the most potential for Bitl Torah. The Chafetz Chaim explains that, of course, people are supposed to work. Of course, you're supposed to make a living. Of course, you have to support your family. The question becomes, though, what do you do in your spare time when you're not working? So if you sit down and learn Torah, okay, so that just justified all the hours you just spent working, and that shows that those hours are not really Bitl Torah either. But if when you come home, you plop down and waste your time doing whatever, so that demonstrates that even your working hours are Bitl Torah. So he says a person who works has the most potential for Bitl Torah, because if he doesn't take advantage of his free time, he will potentially squander all of those hours from before. So again, I'm not one to give brachos, different story for a different time. But anyway, I think that the best way to think about this is just really, whatever time you have left in yeshiva, whether you're leaving like tomorrow or post-Pesach or next year or 20 years, it doesn't matter, wherever you're going to be next year or in 5 years, just spend as much time as possible learning Torah, because it's really the only thing that will help you grow and do a lot of chazal. Okay, shkoyach. Thanks for listening.